My name is Mish Madsen. I am a master's candidate at MIT in the computer science department. My main area is autism technologies. During last January, I took a rapid prototyping class, and the goal of the class was to go to the mall and figure out where there was kind of a breakdown in the way that the mall was serving the mall's customers. A few months ago, I'd been to a disabilities technology conference, Assets, and I was thinking, you know, if you were blind, how would you navigate this mall? You know, I was sort of looking for signs that were in Braille. There weren't any signs that were in Braille. You know, I was trying to figure out if it sounded really different in different places. It sounds a little different. You know, if you're about to turn into a hallway, it might sound slightly different. For me, I'm not necessarily attuned to it, but you can see that it's a possibility. But it occurred to me that this was a place that had really clear directional information. You know, you go forward, and then you go right to go to some particular store, but that there was no way to get it if you couldn't see. And I was thinking that this was actually probably something that could be built into a fairly simple system. And it turns out that everybody has a phone these days, and a lot of people have phones. So since then, I've been working on trying to sort of build this technology into a phone. So I actually ended up doing this as a final project in a prosthetics class that I took this spring. The professor of that class was Professor Hugh Herr, who actually does a lot of different work in prosthetics, rehabilitation technology, orthotics. He actually has two prosthetic legs himself that he built. So he's very interested in the area of rehabilitative technologies, but hadn't really thought about the possibilities of building technology for people who are blind or who have low vision. As a result, he's actually given me some funding to try to develop some devices for this and contact people and help them develop the technology with your feedback. My goal here was to build sort of the simplest possible system. You know, instead of having a dedicated device, instead of having a different device, have it be programmed for your phone. So right now I'm working with the Symbian operating system, and I've just been working with Rich Calgalero, I hope I'm not messing up a name, and with Sunish Gupta, who's actually here, just trying to develop a system that will sort of suit your needs and work for you. So my current paradigm now is to basically start out with like a floor map of a building and then map out a couple of different routes that one might take that sort of cover the same different areas. So in MIT, it's actually very convenient because all of the buildings have numbers and all of the rooms have numbers. So you can actually just, you know, start in building 3 and go to building 5, and that actually makes sense. Clearly in other settings, you might want to have different starting and ending points. The idea is that through either timing, counting steps, sort of visual use of the camera on the phone, or some combination of those, it would figure out how far you've walked in one part of the building, how long you had to go before you turn, and then we'll let it tell you when you're approaching a turn. At this point, you'd actually tell it when you turn, so it can recalibrate for the next stage of the map. So if the place that you're going to is 100 feet forward, turning right, going 50 feet, turning left, and going 30 feet, it tries to figure out when you've gone 100 feet. And then it tells you about when you're supposed to turn. You know, it says you have a turn in about 25 feet, you turn in about 10 feet. And then you actually can tell it when you've made the turn, so it can recalibrate how well it's gauging your distance along that route and your speed. And then you make the turn, and then you go to the next phase of the route. As you might tell, this actually requires some manual input from me in advance. Right, I'm looking at floor maps, or alternatively, I'm actually measuring different parts of a building, figuring out what the distances are along them. It's the kind of system where it would be best possibly if it worked in public spaces that a number of different people would use. So different places I thought about doing are places like grocery stores, public transportation areas, MIT, which I conveniently have good access to. One of the philosophies in my group is that all of our autism technologies are built with significant input from people who have Asperger's and autistic disorder. And I've sort of tried to carry that theory here and get your input on input methods. Does it make sense to actually tell when you're taking a step versus when you're turning versus when you've gotten to some intermediate point on the route? Output methods, so I have a number of different kinds of phones. I have a number of different kinds of headphones and headphone amplifiers, or maybe it makes more sense just to hold the phone in different kinds of places and different locations within those spaces that make sense to be able to navigate for. I actually have gotten a study approved by the MIT Committee on the Use of Humans as Experimental Subjects, and I'm hoping to enroll some of you. I would like to perhaps meet with some of you at other times and places where you usually travel, try to map these phones to those spaces, and be able to actually compensate you for your participation in trying the system and giving your feedback.
I have your contact information, mm-hmm. and I will send that out on email, and we'll put it up on the webpage. So if you're interested, you can contact Mish and go from there, and you'll be hearing from me.
I actually do have an audio demonstration here that I can play. I'm working on new versions in a couple of different directions, but this is the version that I last tried in I believe, July with Rich Cavallaro, and I can just play it. It has some voiceover for me, which buttons I'm actually pushing on the phone.
Well, while they're restarting the computer, does anybody have any questions?
Oh, yeah, that would be good.
Some years back, there was efforts to do this with putting signs over every door that transmitted through infrared or something. You have a little receiver. Whatever became of that?
I don't know what became of that specific approach to it. Basically, for that general group of technologies, I consider it to be a major downside that you can only make it work in places where the people who run the building and kind of administer everything are happy to have either signs posted on every door or, you know, your RFID chips, that's kind of a new thing, posted on, you know, every place that people could possibly want to visit, or your talking fluorescent lights put into the bulbs and so forth. These are actually things that at MIT, you know, at the Museum of Science, they might be happy to try out. But that for your average building, you know, they sort of look at the administrative issues and the cost of putting in something like that versus the relatively small population that you could potentially help, and it doesn't necessarily make sense for them. You know, it's not necessarily something that is easy to convince them to implement.
Let's pick an example. Let's say the Burlington Mall. Though, what would be the time involved, say, in developing a map, say, for the Burlington Mall, which is a huge mall?
Actually, for a lot of these places that are malls, these maps already exist, right? I can actually just log onto their website and see a visual of their map to a reasonably good scale. So then what I end up doing is preparing sort of a big version of this map, trying to use it to navigate between a few stores, you know, like across the mall to the food court or whatever, and then fine-tuning it rather than having to redevelop the whole thing from scratch. A lot of places actually already have fairly general maps of their locations. So, for instance, South Station, which is another place that I was thinking of going to, you know, it's a station with this huge atrium in the middle, but it actually does have a fairly good map that says, okay, here's where each of the exits for the different tracks are, here's where each of the food stands are, and so forth. And that's on a map on his website.
Mish, are you saying that you would have a version of this map in a phone?
Yeah. Okay. So that's the idea. So basically, what I've already kind of done a lot of in my classes at MIT is thinking about how to take any visual representation and turn it into code.
Okay.
Right? So what I basically end up doing is the distance between these 2 points, between these 2 points, between, you know, the other points between those, and then figuring out which combinations of those distances create each room. So if we were going between two stores in the mall, they use the same distance twice, right? Like if you'd walk the same place to go to first store and then you'd walk some of the same distance again to go to the second store, they don't have to re-measure that distance, right? I can just say this distance plus that second distance gets you to the same place. So it's actually pretty simple. I actually tested the theory of how long it would take me to sort of create a new map for a new place. So I went to a retreat for people with autism this summer, and I happened to run into someone who was blind at the retreat who actually runs the visually impaired iPhone users group. And I ended up remapping the bottom floor of the building such that she could find, you know, any route among five different places in that floor in about an hour. It's something that takes a non-zero amount of time, but it's, if it's something that can be used repeatedly by a lot of different people, like South Station, like the Burlington Mall, and maps already pretty much exist for it, it's something that makes a lot of sense for me and for Hugh Herr to think about how to actually get to you.
Welcome to the Wayfinder system. Press the select button when you're done calibrating. Press the select button when you're done calibrating. Press the select button when you're done calibrating.
So it's
just
pause one
set. How many steps did you take while calibrating?
Okay, so, what the system currently relies on is coming up with some predetermined distance. So right now it's 20 feet. It can be any arbitrary distance. And if you had some convenient distance that you knew about or that you had a tape measure for, that would work just fine. And then figuring out how many steps it takes you to walk along there. So it basically comes up with your average time to takes to walk that distance, right? And then if you're walking in places like South Station or the mall, you may encounter obstacles more frequently, and your average time may be slightly longer, and I can, like, account for that. And I'm actually working on various recalibration methods during the walk. But for the initial calibration, you walk 20 feet, you tell it how many steps you walk, and it figures out the size of your stride.
Can that be programmed kind of like MapQuest, you know, where you indicate to the system where you are?
Yeah.
And where you want to go?
Yeah, you'll hear a menu that says route 1 is from A to B, route 2 is from B to C, route 3 is from A to C. But, of course, the system that makes more sense, and that I'll be going to as I deal with more starting and ending points, is, of course, where you're starting from, where are you ending.
What happens if you were walking through the mall and you stop to talk to somebody or look at something else, or you kind of get interested in something along the route?
Sure.
Do you have to tell it how far you've gotten, and then does it just wait, or can you pause it? Or?
Right, so I'm actually definitely incorporating this. Just as a quick thing, right now you push a button every time you step. Obviously, that's not the final design. One possibility for the final design is that you push a button when you start walking, you walk at your average gait, and then you push another button when you stop walking. And if that happens to be, you know, as you get interested in talking to someone and talk to them, then that won't be included in the time between your starting point and your ending point.
Misha, I think one thing that you may want to take into account, and I'm not sure how you would do this, but sighted people, I think, maybe can walk at a more uniform average gait. A blind person will sometimes encounter things that they have to check out and find out what they are. It's not as much of an issue, perhaps, if you have a dog, because the dog whips you along once you figure out where you're going. But say for a cane traveler, you know, you're walking along and you suddenly come to a potted plant and you got to find out what it is and how to get around it. And there goes your timing constant.
So there are a couple different ways of dealing with this. One is that if you're starting with the system, you can specifically make routes that avoid weird obstacles like potted plants, right? That if you're starting out in a large room and you're not sure which side of the room to go to, potentially it makes more sense to go to a side of the room rather than trying to take a route through the middle of the room, in which case you're potentially more likely to end up with the obstacles near the wall. But if I can direct you towards the middle of the room and then on a route straight through the middle of the room, that may make more sense. Another thing is that you have some non-uniformity in terms of whether, you know, things come up in the way that are unclear, but you actually do have some uniformity in terms of whether people are in your way. You know, when I notice that I'm walking with Rich, it's actually much easier to walk through MIT because everybody actually moves out of the way.
Yeah, in the malls, they don't necessarily
move. They don't do it in the malls.
No.
I believe that. But at MIT, if you're starting out with somewhere with relatively narrow hallways, you know, they have to snap out of their own world a little bit. When I'm trying to walk through MIT and I'm walking really fast, I end up with a lot of non-uniformity because people just kind of be like walking very slowly immediately in front of me.
The other variable is that I know for me, if I'm walking in a place that I know where I'm going, I walk a heck of a lot faster than when I'm in a new place where I'm trying to take in non-visual cues as much as possible. And I know my stride is also different in those scenarios.
Right.
So having the ability to work out some sort of algorithm that would account for that would probably make a lot of sense.
Yeah, I'm definitely working in a couple of different directions for algorithms of that. But also, kind of, if I tell you where you're going in advance, I sort of tell you that this location has been mapped as places without significant obstacles suddenly there, that kind of gives you the advanced knowledge. So I was walking with Rich through parts of MIT that he was not particularly familiar with, but he was significantly faster walking with me and listening to the phone than he had been when we were just kind of like strolling through there before, right? Because it was kind of like, you're not going to run into a sudden table in the middle of the floor that I'm not telling you about, you know? You might, but you're much less likely to than if he was just randomly walking down a hallway he'd never been in.
You're talking about floor plans. There are a lot of blueprints out there for all these various buildings.
Mm-hmm.
You probably have how much footage one place is from another place.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you can try to incorporate that from the architect, finding it from the architect of the Bulletin Mall or wherever.
Yeah, exactly. And a lot of these places, you know, say, can I see your floor plans? And some of them don't see the problem with it. Some of them say, well, we have security issues about that. But we'll be happy to show you this regular customer map. And I try to do that to scale and incorporate all the locations.
Yeah.
If I can get to the blueprints, which I've been able to do for a couple places at MIT, and also for this other university that we were at, the Autism Retreat, I actually could just look at the direct floor plan, which is perfect, because it also showed doorways and stuff, so I could get exact locations. But for other things, you know, it's a little bit of starting out with the proximal blueprint and fine-tuning. And actually, that works really well. So this is the calibration part.
10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10
information tab, so you walk 20 feet and then you tell it how many steps it took you to walk 20 feet. And then they give you a route menu. So right now the route menu looks like building 5 to building 3, building 3 to building 10, building 5 to attic, which is where Rich was living. That sort of menu. And the first one is route 1, the second one is route 2, the third one is route 3. And then after it gives you that route menu, it says, okay, which route do you want? And then you choose 1, 2, 3 using up and down and select. And then basically what it's going to do is tell you where to start and how to use the interface. So right now it's you take a step every time you step, you press left when you turn left, you press right when you turn right. That's pretty much the main information. You can choose up to choose a new route. And then at that point it'll start saying, okay, go forward. Right now, it presses every time you step, and it'll tell you a left turn is coming up in 25 feet, in 10 feet, and then you make the turn. That's for summary. I can now play it.
Welcome to the Wayfinder system. Press the select button when you are done calibrating. press the select button. When you are done calibrating, press the select button. When you are done calibrating.
Correct.
How many steps did you take while calibrating? You sat down and select virtues. 10, 10, 10.
Up.
11, 11.
Up.
12, 12.
Correct.
12 steps was selected. Strike like this. 2, 5. In chess. Pick a route in MIT. Possible routes are. 1. Building 7 for building 3. 2. Building 3 for building 10. 3. Building 10 for building 7. 4. ATIC for building 3. 5. Lobby 10 for ATIC. Use up, down, and select virtues. Route 1, route 2 was selected. Press select when you step. Press left when you turn left. Press right when you turn right. Press down for route information. Press up to choose a new route. Start at outside entrance for building 3. Go forward. Right turn. In 25 feet.
Correct.
Right turn. Select for every time
in less than 10 feet.
Right.
Turning right.
Correct.
Right now, you push the select button every time you take a step, and then, yes, so, and something
like that. With this test.
I got the beep and turn off recently, but that was on a different phone. So it'll direct you to the next part of the route, it'll tell you to turn right again, and then it'll tell you the end of the route to come down.
With this test.
I'm not going to assume that you're going to take steps quite as fast.
Right.
If I was taking them that fast, I'd be like sprinting and stuff. They're really cool, but this is just for the demo.
Test. Wind is test. From this test.
Down.
103 steps in total. 6 to 5 feet walk in phase.
So, should you be interested?
3 0
steps
walk in
phase. You may want to know how far you walked along this part of the route. For instance, if you were using the phone in some situation where you were testing it and you wanted to know for later
Mark
use.
Test.
I don't know. Information is good.
Fitness test. End of route. In 25 feet. 6 is test. End of route. In less than 10 feet.
Now that I've reached the end of the route, I can choose another route. Up.
Pick a route in MIT.
So,
possible routes are. 1. Building 7 or building 3.
I'm just thinking of being in a mall as well as how a GPS works, like in a business district. If you could build it in, it might be interesting to, as you're passing places that aren't necessarily your ultimate destination,
mm-hmm.
it could be saying those.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because, among other things, it's interesting to know what's there, but
okay.
then that could also give you a sense, once you know a place, that you're going in the right direction or not.
Yeah, right. And we also had sort of explore mode and navigate mode, so you might be able to just walk around and tell it you're going forward. They'll say, you're likely to be passing Omopa players, etc. So.
And also, is there a way that perhaps you wouldn't have to be using your hands to hit a button?
Mm-hmm.
You could
yeah.
voice activate it, because what if our hands are full? What if we're trying to use a cane and we're shopping and we're carrying things? We
yeah.
always don't have that hands-free
yeah. yeah.
mode.
So this phone and a lot of phones these days actually do have accelerometers. So you can do some kind of step counting. It incorporates a reasonable amount of noise. You have it in your pocket as opposed to on your foot, which is the perfect place to put it, but kind of inconvenient. I had not even thought of or a phone.
Yeah.
But I actually hadn't even thought of voice activation.
Now, one thing I'm thinking, I have a phone that has a screen reader in it. For me to navigate around in my phone, I have a screen reader going. Have you thought about that in terms of the use of this product, because you've obviously got a speech synthesis built into it. Have you thought about the interface with screen reading technology that's already in a phone?
I actually don't really understand the model for screen reading that's on a phone. What I don't understand is that my phone already has TDS built into it. But it sounds like at this time, if you want your phone to be able to read its own screen, you need to like buy an extra package for it.
Yeah.
Which like confuses me, because the package is already...
The GPS reads the words that it knows about, but the screen reader that goes into your phone is kind of set up so that it can read anything that happens to appear on the screen.
Display.
Sure.
That's why you need a screen reader over and above the GPS, because the GPS is a much more limited form of screen reading.
Right.
It's not actually reading the screen. It's just actually saying the things it knows in response to things that it knows. So if you throw it a curve and you throw it something it doesn't know, it has no idea what to do.
That seems like a reasonable explanation of how those things interface right now. I think over time, you know, your standard TTS technology that is free and pre-existing will be able to do more and more of the functionality that, you know, the current add-on GPS.
I'll tell you,
because it's not just the screen, it's not just the speech technology, it's being able to navigate to what's on the screen and identify the elements that are on the screen. Have you seen phones with screen readers built into them?
I think I've seen some niches like a little bit, but
okay.
I haven't played with them that
well,
much.
Well, then you know what? Maybe that's something.
That's my next activity. That's right.
That's something we can do when.
I can see some niches right now.
Because I can see that being a potential both a conflict. Because you wouldn't be able to run two screen readers at the same time.
It would be no effort to say everything that's being said by this program is also going to be output as a text file, right? And then I could output it as a text file offline, and then you could read it with your screen reader. The problem with my current TTS is that it has this very low male voice, and what I have that I'm hoping that some of you will try are various sets of headphones, right? So some of them like go over your head, you can put them in front of your ears, some of them are bone conduction headphones, etc., but these really low frequency noises are really hard for transmit. You know, it's kind of like if you buy cheap speakers, you can hear the treble parts of the music really well, but there's no bass.
Mm-hmm.
It's that exact problem, because it's hard to transmit those bass frequencies well. So if you actually had screen reading technology that was in a higher register, that would actually be a lot easier to hear.
I think it's not just the register, though. It's also the intelligibility. I think you have to understand that a lot of the TTS software that's around does minimally well at saying things.
Well, no, and not everybody has a phone with a screen reader.
That's right.
Either.
Yeah.
So I raised the issue because, like, I'm going to need the screen reader to do other things with my phone.
So if you have it anyway, it might make sense.
So you might want to, yeah. And
you wouldn't be able to necessarily input in the... Like, right now what I have is a Python script. So the Python says, if you press left, then that means you made a left turn. If you press right, you made a right turn. If I had that same information about go forward, go forward, go forward, okay, now turn right, in a text file, you wouldn't be able to give it the same kind of input that I can in Python. There are other ways of recording it that would make more sense, would be more intelligible. For instance, everything that currently the TTS just said would potentially be the same way, you know, like a voicemail system says, you have two new messages, but in a real person's voice, I can potentially do that on my phone.
Right. And we may be more forgiving about the quality of TTS than you are.
Right.
Remember that, because we're accustomed to using it all the time.
But the fact that you have less of a tolerance also may work to your advantage in that
you'll work harder
to make it intelligible to everybody.
Right.
I suspect that once you get this on the market, you're going to have to deal with people with varying degrees of ability to tolerate TTS.
So you start this thing up and you say, I've turned left, but then somewhere along the way you realize you turned right and you're lost. What would you do to set yourself straight? You basically probably just ask a sighted person, where am I, and start up from there again?
That's my current best idea. Best in the sense of I haven't thought of anything better, not in the sense that it's particularly good.
If you could put a function in that could indicate what your location was...
Right, so then
that would really be
actual
helpful.
The problem is that, like, real GPS would be extremely useful. Unfortunately, you need to be outside. So there's some scenarios where, you know, in places that are like South Station or places like the museum. I think the Museum of Science, because I think they're probably giving their floor maps. But in places like those, it may make sense to sort of have some hybrid inside-outside interactions. And if you are actually outside or near somewhere outside, potentially making a single call to GPS to say, where am I, would be something useful and buildable. But in general, that's kind of why it says if you do up, you can pick a new route, right? Because you realize I'm lost, I need to start somewhere else. Okay, I'll go back to the main menu easily at any time during my route.
But then you have to go to the beginning of that route first.
You can re-choose a different route. Right.
No, no, no. But what I'm saying is, say you're in building 5.
Yeah.
And you were thought you were going to go from building 5 to building 3. And then you got totally messed up and lost.
And ended up in building 10.
And ended up in another building. To use another route, you'd still have to get back. If you want to go from building 5 to building 3,
mm-hmm.
you decide, okay, I'll try a new route. You still have to get back to the origin of the initial route.
Actually, all you have to do is get to a place that the phone knows about. So the idea is that you'll have a set of 10 locations, and you can start
right.
at any of those 10 locations and end up in
right.
any of
those
locations.
But you have to go
so
back
to
one of
those
locations. Right.
You don't have to be in the place that you started out from and got lost from. Right? You could say,
no, but you have to get to one of those locations.
Yeah.
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 Which means that you still have to have some idea of where you are. I think at some point you're going to have to wrestle with the dilemma of getting input from the world that you're in, because to create a system that doesn't know where you are is kind of the problem that we're already in. If you don't know where you are and the system says, I need to know where you are, and you can't say where you are, then you're toast.
So the question is not like, am I building the best possible system? I've sort of tried to do a number of different triangulations around, you know, what is your current route if you started out at the main entrance to find building 5, to go from building 5 to the main room. And so, you know what I mean? Like, these are questions that currently exist and don't have good solutions. I may not be able to give the best possible solution that tells you for anywhere in the universe where you are and how to
yeah.
get to anywhere
right.
in
no.
the universe.
Of course.
But if you do go to places like SAS National and really need to know how to get to track 5 from the entrance, that I can do, and that might be potentially very useful.
As long as we don't get lost.
An additional twist, I mean, people, I think Steve
yeah.
mentioned that we often don't, you know, walk at consistent paces,
mm-hmm.
you know, because we hit a flower pot or whatever it might be.
Spend hours
an
talking.
An additional thing is that if you do sort of stick us in the middle of the floor,
mm-hmm.
we don't necessarily walk straight either. So you'll have to deal with that one somehow.
Not walking straight. The question is, if you're in like sort of a large environment where you tend to not walk straight a lot, but kind of frequently end up at about the right destination.
Well, I don't walk straight because I don't walk straight.
Right.
That's the thing. It
right,
doesn't
right.
matter where I am.
So there are a couple of different like questions that are coming. Is it that you're walking straight but in the wrong direction, or that you're kind
no.
of like going off to the left and then off, kind of like more
veering?
People
it?
Veer.
Yeah,
people
right.
tend to veer when they blind.
And,
people tend
yeah,
to veer when
yeah,
they walk.
And especially in a big environment where you have, say, a lot of bouncing, echoey sounds, and
sure.
you don't really know where you are.
So
and
it's
part
much
of
easier
your,
to walk straight in a hallway like this,
yeah.
coming down to this
right.
room,
right.
than it is when you're in that central lobby area.
So there are a couple of different things. Part of the whole reason I'm doing it indoors, right, is that you have a lot less of this problem. If you can go
oh,
anywhere
but that's not,
in any direction at any time, you really can only go backwards and forwards in the hallway.
Well, no, but
a little
even
bit to the left, a little bit to the right. But,
yeah. but Mish, even indoors, you can end up in places that you really don't have any idea. Let's say even in a situation like that lobby, like
mm-hmm.
the big lobby down
mm-hmm.
there, you walk into that and you've got sound bouncing all around everywhere. You don't really know where you are. You're not even sure what's where. And sometimes in an effort to discover that, you just end up wandering. Don't necessarily assume that because you've narrowed down the possibilities, you may still have that same problem.
Yeah, I absolutely do not. Like,
yeah.
this has been sort of one of the most interesting learning experiences of my life so far, right?
Yeah, I imagine
of,
it is.
Because, you know, you walk around all the time and you have this idea of how people walk and how people navigate, and then you say, ah, now if I can't see anything, how do I navigate?
Can you build in things that you know are going to be there? For example, when you walk down this corridor, down toward this room, you get to a point where there's a set of stairs on the right. Can you build in that kind of information? Like, there is a set of stairs on your right.
Landmarks.
Sure. Yeah.
Because that might be very helpful.
Oh yeah.
When I was making decisions about how to describe how to get to this room, that was one of the things that I said, because you can kind of hear those. I can hear those stairs
right.
as I'm passing them. I don't know that necessarily they're stairs, but I know it's an opening. That might be very helpful. Any kind of landmark location information that you can give about the route that is not going to change. You
mm-hmm.
know what I mean? You know,
mm-hmm.
stuff that doesn't tend to get moved.
Yeah, no, like the big pot of plants in the mall.
It would be really, really helpful.
Mm-hmm.
Particularly helpful in terms of ensuring that you're still oriented to where you think you are.
Think you are, yeah.
Right, that's a good idea. I mean, I sort of thought of it, but I thought of it in the sense of you explore and it tells you what's around you, but not in the sense of if you already know there's supposed to be stairs
yep.
here,
I use landmarks like that.
Apparently there are stairs, and you know you're 10 feet off, if nothing else.
I use landmarks like that
all the time. Yeah.
And it's particularly helpful going into hotels. That those kinds of landmarks were absolutely essential to my successful capacity to navigate.
A dimension of it that you might consider in general, Mish, would be to say landmarks, not only that we can touch, but landmarks that create sonic differences,
mm-hmm.
open spaces,
right.
you know, hallways off to one side. Even if you're not planning to go down them, they're useful information.
Could you conceivably build in the capability for a person to customize a bit, like in a GPS, you know,
right.
we can put in our own points of interest.
Right, right. Well, and for this, it might be helpful for me to actually be able to say, you know, indicate in some way that there actually are, you know, there's some landmark that you want to be able to remember, so that when you travel through in the future, you can have a gentleman
motion. Yeah, a question and suggestion. So part of the problem with GPS is working it indoors, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I'm wondering if you thought about coming at the problem from a different angle, rather than mapping the buildings, to potentially have some sort of interior GPS system for a mall or for a public building where maybe it worked out for the Wi-Fi. I don't know. If you had two or three Wi-Fi locations inside a mall, then you could triangulate. Have you thought of it from that point of view?
So my other research group is actually working with a facility called the Boston Home, which is mostly, it's about 90% people with very late stage multiple sclerosis. Right, so everybody's in wheelchairs, they're trying to navigate around the building. A lot of people have trouble operating in wheelchairs. So what they've been trying to do is help the nurses find the residents, and help the residents find each other. They've actually been putting tablets on the wheelchairs and then putting wireless access points all around the building, and then saying, okay, you're closest to these three, so we triangulate you to be in your room or in the activity room, and then the nurse who's looking for you can come find you at that time. They've been working on this project for about a year and a half, and in the next 3 months, they will hopefully be rolling it out with a couple of wheelchairs. It turns out that in order to do this effectively, you need to have a huge number of wireless access points.
Yeah.
And sort of really good information about where they are. You need to do a lot of buy-in for each room in the building, where the nearest Wi-Fi points are, and you know what their names are and so forth. It's a different approach. It's being worked on, but by 10 people full-time. But in terms of doing it via the Wi-Fi, that's really the same kind of infrastructure question that the rest of these RFID fluorescent light things have.
If you have a user interface that's constantly talking to you and commenting on your environment that you're walking around, what will that do to your situational awareness? For example, Amy was just talking about the stairs that she passes and here. If it's constantly talking to you, will it make it harder to do that sort of thing? I would think, yeah.
You could turn it off.
I think you'll get a different answer for every person and a different answer for the amount of information. I guess the trick is to balance it so that you get enough useful information so that even if there is a trade-off, you can live with the trade-off.
Maybe there is something to what you were saying, Mish, about the different types of headphones, or you can just make sure you use the product with headphones that are only covering your ear partway so you can still hear other people or hear other things. Or don't be distracted.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. In addition to the study, if you feel free to just email me with comments, thoughts, ideas, questions, blah, 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 et cetera. The more that I hear it, probably the better I can do.
So, certainly feel free when you're further along in this, feel free to come back and talk with us again. We are going to have to stop. I will be sending out your information.
Thank you.